It's time for Advice Line. Call now at 800-866-8883. That's 800-866-8883. Here's your host, Roy Masters.
Well, I'm very happy to hear, David, that the general population is flocking to movies with patriotic and religious themes and not the other way around.
Well,
and that gives
me a little
hope.
Say I told you so.
Well, I was hoping that one day people like myself, yourself, and others like ourselves would be appreciated, but especially, you know, outcasts like me, and I don't know about you yet, but me, because I've been an outcast in this country since I've been here. I've always done things, you know, that just seemed a little odd to people, but look where it led me. So I'm happy to have done all those things and been sort of persecuted for it. I've had most of my life here in the country, 57 years in the country. It's been nothing else but one injustice after another, like living in sort of a pseudo-Hitler Germany.
Who was it, one of the founding fathers, that had to move to France because they hated him so much? Was it?
I know who you
are. He was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I can't think of it. Yes, I can't think of it now.
But he was considered, okay, Thomas Paine.
That's right.
People hated his guts because, you know why? Because he went and he told everybody exactly what he thought of them.
Well, he didn't like, he was a very religious man, but didn't like the way the church taught people about Jesus. He didn't like the way that they did it. And any more than I'm a Thomas Paine in that sense. I love Christianity. I love what it stands for. But the way it's taught and the way it's divided up into clans and tribes is one Bible. You can't have 55,000 different interpretations and different people interpreting it to you as if you were, you know, 2 years old.
Yeah.
Somehow you got to get it. Someday you got to get it. And that's what he didn't like. And I imagine it began, they ran away from Europe because of that. They ran away from religious persecution. And secular persecution, I suppose. Yeah. So he didn't like that. And I'm not anti-religious. I'm pro religion, if you like. But my religion, religion should be lived and understood by noble fathers and women who love noble men. But that seems to have, you know, taken a downward turn in the 57 or 58 years I've been here. It's gone completely the opposite way. I'm glad to see there's an inclination to come back. But where is back? You know, where is it? Where is the beginning? Where is the beginning? You know, one of the sayings of the Gospel of Sir Thomas, of Thomas, Jesus answered when he says, "Well, how shall our end be?" He was asked, and he says, "Where the end is, there is also a beginning." So, there is another beginning for us. It's always waiting for us. It's just like that unclosed loop of a circle. Somehow there's a gap between us and our Creator, and all we have to do is step across and have a full symmetry, a full circle. And so it doesn't matter about our past or what we've done. If we can just feel a conscience from it and let that conscience play on us in such a way that it transforms us. By the way, we have a tape, what is it called? It's a quote of the week. And every week we send a little quote with pictures appropriate, like snow and tulips and some little beautiful picture. We find some very beautiful pictures. And some saying of mine, and I thought I'd just start mentioning it because anybody who wants to be on that mailing list, there's no charge. We just send it to you and you click it. There's a nice picture. And this week is, everyone has a conscience with which to alter their nature a little every day. If you practice this, it never becomes conscience. With love, Roy. That's where it comes out every week. You like that?
Say it again.
Yeah. Everyone has a conscience with which to alter their nature a little every day. If you practice this, it never becomes a conscience.
I don't get that part of it.
Well,
it never becomes a conscience.
A conscience is.
You said everybody has a conscience.
No, a consciousness.
Oh.
Everybody has a consciousness.
Okay.
With which to alter their nature a little every day.
Okay, I get it.
If you practice this, it never becomes a conscience.
Yeah, that's
a
good. Conflict. I like that. Yeah.
See, I don't have a conscience because I practice it every day. I should every day. That's not that hard. Just telling your mother that just a few minutes ago.
Then you
ago.
Don't have a snail trail of anxiety leading.
No, late. No snail trail of anxiety. Okay, we'll be right back.
The foundation of human understanding teaches an observation exercise, often called meditation, which permits you to become objective toward your problems and allows your heartaches, bad habits, fears, and anxieties to be completely eliminated from your life without effort on your part. Until you have begun to practice this exercise, much of what you see and hear on the following program may be shocking and upsetting to you. But if you will listen calmly and with an open mind, you may discover the key to the peace of mind and joy for which you've been searching all of your life. And now, from the foundation of human understanding, here is Roy Masters.
Do we expect a lot of calls this evening, or is everybody focused and immersed in the elections?
No. This is Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, I see. So...
But, you should have seen the shopping centers today, just crawling with people.
What are they shopping for?
Getting their drinks and their chips and
their
munchies and it's a special weekend. It's a special weekend. It's a capitalist paradise this weekend.
Oh wow!
Everybody that has something to sell that they can somehow get people to associate with the football and the Super Bowl is making money.
Do you like to watch that stuff, David? I don't think you do. Do you?
You know, I have a confession. What? Have never watched a Super Bowl ever.
I haven't either.
And I don't care.
Would someone please convince me what a good thing that is? I would be very happy.
I'm sorry.
But I would like. Maybe I'm missing something.
You know, I mean, I would rather watch people fishing. I mean, at least you can learn techniques. I'm serious. I'll sit and watch guys fish because I like fishing. But
well, I mean, maybe you're hooked to fishing, so that's like a sort of a positive post-traumatic reinforcement.
No, I mean, I don't do it regularly, but once in a while, you know, it's kind of fun to watch guys catch big fish in, you know, beautiful clear water. That's fun. That looks like fun to me. You know, getting out on a wet football field with a guy, you know, 300 pounders jumping on you, grinding you into the ground, that doesn't look fun to me.
You remember that big when I caught that 400 pound shark? I had it tied to the side of my boat. I don't remember that.
Yep, either. Like the old man of the sea. You had it in. You had it.
It was just a small boat. And one time I was fishing out by the islands in a small skiff, Anacapra Island. Let's see how far that is away. That was about 12 miles out, 12, 13 miles out from Ventura. And it was a 14-foot skiff with one engine. And I don't know who was with me. I think it was Alan. And I got a tug on my line, and I started reeling it up. And it came up very easy, and I saw an outline of a shark that was bigger than the boat. And so it was right near the surface, but it came up as if to greet me. I was going to be caught.
In other words, it has sort of caught you.
And we wouldn't be doing Advice Line.
Now, I do remember the one time I was out with you. It was you and me in that little boat, that a little runabout that we had, and we got surrounded by a pod of killer whales.
Oh, yeah, I know. They normally won't hurt you. No, that's right.
Yeah, normally, unless they smell fish
on
your boat.
It's always stupid to go 20 miles out in the ocean in a small 14-foot Boston whaler, you have to admit. All right, now what are we going to do tonight? I was talking about the tape of, not the tape of the month, we'll talk about that later on. But there's something that I think my audience would absolutely enjoy. And I don't know why I've mentioned it before, but I haven't. I apologize. But there are things that I say that my staff picks up in the course of the week, and I don't remember myself saying it, but they assure me that I have. And they've made a quote of the week. And for the last several years, those who are on the list, you know, the email list, they just get a copy of it. It's a pretty beautiful picture, a beautiful photograph. And with it, my mug and a quote. And I say to myself, where did they get that? I don't remember myself saying these things. I don't. And when I finish the program, I won't remember what I said either. And so maybe I've said something wrong and somebody can pull me up on it. I'd be happy to take a look. But this week, it says, quote of the week, everyone has a consciousness. You missed that, didn't you, when I said it the first time?
Yeah.
With which to alter their nature a little every day. If you practice this, it never becomes a conscience, which is negative. I know that you have a conscience, but your conscience is not the same as consciousness, which is the ability to act out the consciousness in such a way that it doesn't pursue you and conflict you, give you conflict. That's what it's meant. So I do, if anyone would like to get on that list, you call Monday, 866 Radio Roy, and they're happy to put you on that list. There's no charge. We just do it. We just, the click of the mouse, bingo. You know, thousands go out. And you might want to, you know what, you might want to just print them and make a, I don't know, a calendar or something. Let's see. We got any callers? No callers. No wonder we haven't given the phone number. Let's play that piece, because we had Dr. Hader on the day before yesterday, and that was a little bit slow because, well, he was a guest and I think people were listening. And last night was a little bit slow, but it was a good show. And tonight we have a plain slate. So let's bring this theme forward, because I wanted to do that before, but we had so many calls one week that we forgot about it. But here it is. Ready? Go ahead, Joseph.
Hello, Tom, and where is it? Kansas City. Hello, Tom.
How are you?
Good. You got obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
And how did you get the name? I mean,
psychologist.
And so, what is the behavior?
I worry about. I'm not afraid of germs, I guess, which is typical of OCD.
Yeah, they do follow that pattern.
What I'm afraid of is that, for instance, I'll get blood on me from...
Oh, you feel contaminated?
Well, from like if I hear of a shooting in the city or a bad car accident, and that if I drive or walk through that area, I would be connected with that crime. I would get it on me.
But you see, what you're really telling me is that you have a lot of guilt. And it's looking for an expression. You've had a lot of buried, and that guilt, I can tell you where the guilt comes from. A tremendous amount of rage is buried in there. And
it
has everything to do with this. It actually has nothing to do with it, but it's looking for a reason. See, you have buried it. The real reason is not there. You've actually forgotten the real reason. For instance, an alcoholic drinks to forget something wrong. He did wrong. Something happens to him, so he drinks to forget it. But then, after a while, he drinks. But drinking to forget something is not dealing with it properly. He hasn't dealt with the problem properly. But then he doesn't deal with the problem when he gets it. So he tries to put it aside and bury it and so absorbs himself in the pleasure of forgetfulness in the alcohol. But after a while, years go by, he doesn't even know what the problem is. He just, now he's drinking to forget the guilt of drinking. Mm-hmm. To forget the feeling. And so he's got a problem with drinking to forget the guilt of drinking, to forget the guilt of drinking, to forget the guilt of drinking, and he doesn't know what the problem is anymore. See? So this is a mechanism. This is a mechanism of distraction. It's not the real problem, but it is guilt.
And it, you do feel like you've done something wrong, but you don't want to admit that you are wrong, but you are wrong, and your conscience will not be put to sleep. And so it's looking for a reason. And that's the reason. Did you know the average person, when they get a sickness or a problem, they never think of the average person, not even the doctor knows it. They do not. They always give the wrong reasons for the problem. The lady with rheumatoid arthritis did not know that her illness is, and people who have it, I should say, so that I'm not diagnosing a problem, people who have that are affected emotionally. So the emotions affect the interchange of calcium between the blood and the bones. It's a very mysterious problem. But if she could stop being angry, the process would stop. And then the spirit that made you, the mind of God, will take over and organize things. But if you don't know what caused it, anger, frustration, judgment, you try to deal with, you think that the disease is the cause of the problem, and you treat the disease. And a lot of people prefer it to be a disease rather than admit they're guilty.
Right.
See that? So may I suggest you look at, as you start meditating, if you start, use the Be Still and Know. Do you have that yet?
I downloaded it.
Good. Use it, and use it for a week or so, and see what crops up. But the first thing you're going to learn is to deal with difficult situations. You're going to learn to deal with stress. Now, stress is people being mean to you and you getting upset. And that is an interesting thing, because it's a scene of the crime. As in other words, being upset with something in a place, a person, place, or thing, a circumstance. The circumstance, you become sensitized to the circumstances. After a while, everything begins to bother you. But after a while, the circumstances, like an ambulance or a shooting, you've become sensitized to that, because you're starting reacting against it, you're getting upset with it, and you're struggling against it, because you know it's silly, but never mind, the struggle with it makes you more sensitive. During the war, in the Second World War in London, when the buildings were burning down and the whole heart of London was on fire, the emotional state of some people was so high that strange noises, like people crying, or maybe someone playing music, or it could be anything, their mind was so open that they become obsessed with these sounds and sights, and they can never get rid of it. It's like post-traumatic stress disorder. Like a veteran came in called me the other day, and he said he's had a firefight with the bad guys, and a little boy comes in with his belly all open and intestine showing. Immediately the circumstances made him feel guilty, but he was guilty before that. It just found a reason, see? And then he could become angry, then the guilt shows up. There's still not the real reason. The real reason is way back, somewhere else. All right, we're running out of time, so I've got to cut it short. Yeah, well, there we are. I'm not sure that's the best explanation I've ever given, but we do have guilt in us, all of us do, and that guilt manifests, tries to tell us we're guilty, but we refuse to see it. And so, but the guilt keeps growing, and the guilt comes from dealing with situations improperly.
Can I make a point?
Yeah, and then it keeps trying to crop up and tell us, but we keep pushing it down. But then sooner or later, something happens which you can sort of put a name to it, a circumstance to it. It could be anything that is close to, possibly close to, or even furthest away from what it might be. But you overreact to it in a way that causes you to fixate to it as if it was the problem, but it really is a distraction from it. See?
Yeah,
go ahead,
I think
David.
I think that's a very important point, though, that he says that he feels that if he walks through a part of the city where something has happened, that that will get on him. Which, in a sense, though, he's saying that there's something inside of him that uses these kinds of moments as a point of fixation to escape from something that's real, that's actual. See, there's nothing can actually happen to a person.
Well, it can be two things.
Huh?
Yeah, but it could be two things. It could be something that he failed to do, or at a certain time walking through a situation when he could have failed to attend to an accident scene, and the blood and the gore was too much for him, and he walks away. It could be that, and he's forgotten it. And it could be, and therefore there'll be associations with blood and everything else. And it could be that, but at the same time, it could be a distraction, because he does not know that, he may not know or may not want to know that this is the real problem that happened to him a long time ago, but it's not really happening when he's walking through a situation, a street, or a
Dad,
crime is being committed.
Let me give you a perfect example. Give you a perfect example. I've seen my mother, with all due respect, the minute you try to tell her something that she needs to see, immediately she gets the energy to start cleaning the house.
Yeah, that's right. She runs
now,
away
Now, this,
from
in
it.
My opinion, is...
While you're talking to her.
Right. In other words, she starts to notice things that are out of place, and her mind... people's minds go to other things rather than having to face something that's an uncomfortable or a truth about themselves that they don't want to see, something that they don't want to deal with. This thing comes and it takes the place of what they could otherwise see, which
would
allow them to be
free. Well, that's a perfect example. You know, every night I make sure she has a gun by her side. And I said, you know, three times, do you get your gun yet? It's better earlier than later. And she says, what's that? I said, you heard what I said. And she comes out. I said, what did I say? She said, I don't know. I said, what did I say? And she started changing the subject. I said, what did I... There's a tendency not to hear what I have to say, because it's important to have a discipline about this sort of thing. We live out in the boonies, you know? And then she started changing the subject. And that's it. That's exactly right. And then when I start to explain to her, she starts to fidget and walk away and while I'm talking. And there's this thinking of something else. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And my mother's a very bright person otherwise. But little things. But she's guilty about not, you know, I have to tell her every night, do you have this? Did you put the alarm on? You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, just follow through, make sure I put it on. But she always forgets. Everything I ask her to do, so doesn't hear
well,
me.
Well, I didn't really want to make a point anything
but that's
other
the point.
Than
but
I've
that's
seen
the
it all
that's
my
the
life.
Point. Yeah,
you know,
it's all
I've
your
seen
life.
This. And I've seen it in other people. I've seen it when people, like, for example, at work, if somebody gets yelled at, I see them, you know, working harder and moving more deeply into
their work,
which, you know, people become workaholics as a way of escape. And so... You know, and then there are people who have had horrible experiences in childhood. And, you know, I'm remembering that book, Michelle Remembers. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes.
A little girl who was kind of in a coven of devil yes. worshippers.
Yes.
And what they tried to do is they tried to rob her of any hope of ever having, like, a normal life. And there was some innocence in her, though, according to the book, that she never, ever gave it up. She never gave up her innocence. And then later on in life, she was able to move past it.
It reasserted itself, yes.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, it eventually, yes. In other words, no, her innocence reasserted itself.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
That which was lost, yes.
Right. But see, for people, let's say, for example, people that have been brought up in a home where there was horrible things going on, strange things, horrible things, can you see how those people would have a tendency... That even if they have begin to have some kind of a memory, or if they have, like you were talking about, how people are traumatized and then they see a red car and they have a certain smell and there are certain things that remind them of the traumas of their childhood. But rather than face those because they don't know how, they obsess over something else.
Yeah, sometimes they change the scene to mean something else. So it means not what it was. So you may have been, let's say you've been raped in the backseat of a red car, you know, on a rainy night. But let's say the color red is prominent, so you, but that would remind you of guilt, something you don't want to remember. But you've suddenly, I don't know, the color red would mean something different, maybe blood. And in other words, it becomes something different from what it really was, and you obsess on that. It could be anything, but it could be anything. It could be something you even invent.
Well, absolutely. I mean, in other words, beyond fabricating, or let's say, you know, people build stories around single ideas that become entire works of 1,000-page books. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
You're talking.
So I'm
only saying that the key to me, which I never understood, what is this whole obsession with, you know, doing things over and over again, and
like washing the hands, for example.
Yeah, that is like, it's almost like a form of insanity that keeps you, that almost saves them from some other form of insanity.
Or just where you walk on the pavement and missing the cracks in the pavement.
Yeah.
Things like that, you know. And that's just a distraction.
It begs the question, though, are there sort of dark spirits attached to
very
these
often.
Thoughts?
Very often. But let me show the symbology. Let's say, what did one of the Shakespeare's stories, I remember a few lines from it, out, out, damn spot, with all the perfumes of Arabia, you know, cleanse these hands or whatever it is. I can't remember it. It was
Macbeth.
From Shakespeare. Yeah, Macbeth was Macbeth, thank you. I just remember that for some reason. I don't have a good memory for stuff like that. But there's a point. People have hand washing because they feel unclean. They feel like, but they don't know that this uncleanliness is guilt, of accumulating guilt, and they don't understand the nature of the guilt. You can just be angry, and never do anything wrong, but it becomes guilt. But you can't admit that you're wrong. That's the part of ego. And so the ego, the pride of life, which you think is you and thinks to you, and you think it's you thinking, sort of gives you these thoughts. It makes you think that it's something that's contaminating you. The guilt or the aversion, it gives you another reason for the strange feelings that you're going to become sick and you're going to die. And you are dying because anger and hostility is like a slow death. And it comes with it a lot of guilt and a feeling of uncleanliness, and it translates into some equivalent like washing the hands over and over again. If you think you're going to get germs and you're going to pay for your guilts, it talks to you this way, and you start to do this physical thing, and the more you do it, the more you're looking away from it. Like you said, your mother starts to get busy doing some housework while you're talking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the same thing. It's just like you get busy in the doing of it, in the doing of something. You lose yourself. So you can actually listen to a person talking while you're thinking and doing something else. I mean, you don't understand the implications. I had a fellow, I'm just going to go back some memory, in England. He was a person I thought had some, you know, some possibility. His name was Frank. And I started a foundation there, and I put him in charge of that because there was none better. But anyway, I went up to his apartment. He was on welfare at the time, but I want to give him an opportunity. He seemed like a willing student. And he used to give talks, and he used to take my ideas and express them perfectly. I said, how could you learn them word from word? You don't seem to understand what I'm saying. He said, well, I don't want to understand it, tell you the truth, because then I couldn't remember it. And I get a better value out of remembering it and repeating you, and which is not so threatening to everybody else. This is my thoughts. But he said, whenever I listen to you on the radio, I'm eating my spaghetti bolognese, which is a concoction he eats. So while he's eating, he's listening. But while he's eating, he can hear my words, but he doesn't hear the understanding behind it. So in the doing of something, that's eating. You don't have to understand what's going on. And while you're washing your hands, thinking that's going to cure your problem, it doesn't, but it's a distraction, and it accumulates a greater guilt, because every distraction is a guilt. So the more you wash your hands, the more you're going to wash your hands until you can't stop. All right, we'll be right back. Show number is 5067. Yeah, thank you.
Now available as a subscription, the Lecture of the Month offers the 2007 July 4th Freedom Seminar, perhaps one of the most important seminars ever given by Roy Masters. The subject was freedom. The discussions were very deep. The result was powerful. Dr. George Hader joined Roy Masters at this seminar, which added an entirely new dimension to many of the discussions. Subscribe now to the Lecture of the Month and you'll receive Part 1, the first installment of 5 life-saving days at Tall Timber Ranch. Choose to receive by mail a CD or tape every month for $200 a year. Or you can order the audio subscription on the website for just $80 a year. If you'd like to order Part 1 only, call 1-800-877-3227 and ask for the January 2008 Lecture of the Month. For more information, visit FHU.com or call 1-800-877-3227 during regular business hours, Monday through Friday, West Coast time.
If you have meditated and you're on the path, you are invited to call on this program to iron out any little wrinkles that might sort of snare you. It happens. And I also, those of you listening for the first time, might want to inquire what I'm trying to say. And I will give you a cursory outline of what is causing your problem, and then hopefully you can download it free. You go to the website, FHU.com, and download Be Still and Know, and let your conscience catch up with you. That's all you need. Conscience catch up with you enables you to live without conscience, meaning your conscience doesn't bother you. It doesn't mean say you don't have a conscience. It means you're in harmony with it. You may be at war with people, may not like you being a person of conscience, but you'll be acting it out, and you won't have any conscience, meaning negative. So you're a person of consciousness, that part of you that lives out naturally your true self, the purpose of your true self. And so you may not know what the outcome will be, but just do the right thing, and it will come. Each outcome is a stepping stone to the next right thing, and next difficulty you must deal with in a proper way. And so the conversations that we had in the July seminar are just loaded with meaning and wonderful questions and wonderful answers, and which is absent from this program, I'm afraid, all too often, because people are afraid to call on radio and know that I'm going to sort of take them apart a little bit. And you must be brave to call on this program to open up. But it'd be good for you if you did, especially for other people who are too timid to call but might get a clue from our discussion, you see. Oh, I see now. I've sort of come through the back door while they're sort of eavesdropping. And that works all right. But this is the July the 4th Freedom Seminar, and you will get, well, there's 5 days, 6 hours a day, so you'll get 80 minutes on the CD or cassette every month. And if you please call the office, 866 Radio Roy, for the next couple of years, we'll be sending it to you. And you'll have a collection. You can't listen to all at once, it's too much. But just 80 minutes once a month, you could listen to that, and you'll find some wonderful answers. Okay? 866 Radio Roy, call the office, Monday through Friday, and FHU.com is where you can do business with the foundation and donate. Thank you.
Line with Roy Masters. Call Roy at 1-800-866-8883.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again. We were just talking about how your mind tricks you. The cause of your problem is what you think of as the cause of your problem is very, very, very rarely the truth of it. And your obsession with it becomes a bigger problem because you could see, if you would see, what is the cause of your problem. You are quite capable. And there are some things that you may not be, which are sort of naturally caused, like maybe typhoid or something. which requires the medical attention and sort of. But most of your problems are not caused that way. They're caused by your own folly and your own foolishness and your own blindness to recognizing your mistake, which is continuous. An unwillingness to face one's mistake becomes a greater unwillingness, and therefore it requires a device. And so whatever the problem is, you will go to the wrong people. You will believe too easy what relieves you of your guilt from it. And so it becomes more a physical thing, and that's why so many people are on drugs and alcohol, all the rest of it. Especially medicine today caters to every little pain and ache that we could face that could be overcome with a little common sense. But the common sense the common sense, when it's active, is acting as a conscience. That's what it is. Common sense lived is faith, and common sense not lived is conscience. And so the mind, your mind, your egotistical mind, the part of you that thinks through you, and you think it's you thinking, a part of you that gets inside when you go wrong and you go astray, is something I made a home in you. The Bible says sin makes a home in you. It does. And then it gives you a different reason, and you're all too glad, you, the participant, you agree with that. That's the foolishness. See, there's also a part of you that agrees with the excuse, and it wants it, and so it gives you a reason that isn't, and you can become obsessed with it. And, of course, that's what addiction is. Drugs, alcohol is just obvious. Obsessed with a cure. And it's not the alcohol that would do you any harm if you took small amounts, but you have to take more and more and more of it to kill the pain of using it to run away from yourself. What's worse than the sin is the excuse for it, or the enabler, or the wrong reason for it, which you hold, rather than face the reality you want it to become a real physical problem, so you make it physical, or you blame something. And you hold fast to that blame, and so that the blame becomes more stimulating, more angry, more vexing, and requires you more attention because you know the answer's in there somewhere when it isn't. See, so we most of us suffer from this kind of madness in one way or another, believe it or not. Well, so what's your craziness? All right. So what's your sickness? Maybe I can help you. Maybe I can't.
Can I add one comment?
Yes, David. And one comment, please.
By the way, 1-800-866-8883. With this madness, it occurs to me that I believe that many pharmaceutical companies are capitalizing on this the understanding that they have about the way the mind plays tricks on people.
Yes, sir.
And so what they do is they feed into people's worries and their fears by, you know, like these adult ADD commercials where the woman is at work, but she's thinking about doing laundry, which is really where she should be probably.
Yes.
And if, you know, they're saying, well, if you can't concentrate, then you may have adult ADD, which is in a sense kind of like saying, well, your conscience is catching up to you, so you better take a pill pretty quick, but otherwise you're going to be really confused.
That's another way. That's the honest way of saying it.
Yeah.
So
in a sense, it's kind of like a form of voodoo, isn't it?
Yes.
How does voodoo actually work? I know I've been fascinated with that.
Well, voodoo it takes the form of a religious dance.
Can you get a little closer to the mic? You're a little far away.
You dance yourself to oblivion.
No, but so, I mean, people that are like put into zombie states. I mean, isn't?
Oh well, that's a different thing. But the dancing is to exhaustion. So you vent all the anger and hostility you've accumulated in the day, and you dance. It's almost like when a person, let me see if I can give a different example, slightly different, that you're angry and you happen to be physically strong. So you just discovered that if you could just run along the beach for a couple of miles, it's exhilarating and it takes away the tension. And it does. But the point is using that as to burn off the energy of anger is a distraction from the truth, and that makes you more guilty. And you still haven't dealt with the cause, which is being upset with your wife or something at work. And so that energy, anger, it's got to go somewhere. You can't rest. So you run, instead of 2 miles, you run 3 miles. And then you're running 4 miles. And then you're running 25 miles. And you become very good at it. But the point is, As long as it's a distraction, you may develop a strong physical body, but you're breaking down in your head. Because even the running becomes a distraction. Even though it's healthy in one way, it's very destructive in another. And that's why athletes who are busy being athletes are often excel at what they do because of the urgent need to run away from what's wrong with them. And that in itself becomes what's wrong with them. But they can't give it up because they got a gold medal. And the gold medal is a reward. See? For it's a, one can get very confused with the success of it. Because now you can never discover what's wrong. It's like a man who's been in the army and in a fit of rage, and because he hates his father, he kills a lot of the enemy in a fit of anger and rage, and luckily he survives with his life and he kills lots of the enemy. But what he's doing is killing his father in effigy. And so before you know it, he was in a stupor. He does this in a stupor, and he does something very brave and gets away with it, and he gets the Medal of Honor. And everybody, the bands are playing, and all of this in deep inside in his mind, he's feeling guilty because he hasn't relieved. He's actually a murderer. He's killing his father over and over again, but this time the military has made it legal to kill. So he can't kill his father, but he has an opportunity to serve his country, and he does. And then it catches up with him, especially when he gets the medal. He's being rewarded. He's being honored. And so the guilt is then exacerbated, increased. And then he shoots himself. There's no way back. You've got to be very careful about this guilt thing. You die from it. You've got to find the real truth about yourself. You should know the truth. And it will set you free. Well, the Bible says, he that understandeth himself is greater than he who commands a city.
Boy, is that powerful.
Yeah, it is. It's in the Bible. The Bible. Okay, let's take our calls.
Okay.
But did I make my point, David? You think?
I think you made it 17 different ways.
Okay, good. I hope I didn't too. But it's so many different ways it can go, you see. All right, now we can go to Glendale, California. Is it Patty?
Hi, Roy.
Hello, Patty.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, sorry to keep you waiting, but David and I got jabbering.
It's okay. It's always interesting to learn something and view things differently. It's what you always do. My reason for calling, I called you on Monday and told you I was engaged and I'm having trouble.
Oh, I remember you.
And my fiancé called you on the following day.
Yes.
And he had a lot to hear, and he's willing to do it.
Good.
Great.
Which is very good.
But now my concern is he has two little boys. Their mom passed away.
Well, you could still be attentive. You could still be friends. But can he restrain himself from abusing you, taking his pleasure as he did before, minus the gentlemanly, the noble way of being married? First,
well, he seemed to understand what you said.
Yeah, but the point is that the link has been forged. In other words, you own him, and you don't even know you do.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing that was interesting.
That's the part. That's a difficult thing for a woman who has sex with a man, even if she's beaten into the ground by his growing hungers, which he rises out of guilt and fear to appease. She's still turning him into a beast, and in getting the only pleasure she will have left in the end for this boyfriend's abuse is to judge this devil that's more evil than she is. It's almost like she becomes so self-righteous in judging that she becomes gooder, if you excuse the English, gooder and gooder and gooder, and kinder and kinder and kinder, and eventually gives her whole self to him. I mean, what more could a person do but give all this love? But all this love is making this into a beast. That the only victory she has is to be God judging the beast. Nobody knows the secret life of a battered woman. But she owns him. She's turned him into a beast. She's done what the evil work, the work of evil. All in the name of a slavery to the beast that she thinks is love, and she cannot see it for what it really is, a form of slavery. She cannot see it because she doesn't want to see that she doesn't know what love is. She doesn't want to see she's a slave of the beast.
I guess you spoke to me I've been hearing you for several years that those things started coming up again.
Yes.
And I could see that in me.
I don't want it to happen with this young man.
I don't want it either.
But you could turn him into a beast even if he isn't one. Don't you see that?
Right.
If this relationship continues exactly like it was and you get married, you would go on giving yourself until, even though he's not a beast, you would never be happy. That's right. And you would feel contempt for him, and you would wonder, feel guilt. You feel, why do I hate this man? He's good.
Right.
And so maybe I haven't loved him enough. Maybe he'll love me more. And then when he does, it's only sex, and it's abuse. And you feel it as abuse, but you can't say anything because you're married. And it's your whole life is invested in this marriage. Where will you go? What will you do? See?
No, I think this has been somewhere deep down inside, because it's definitely the issue that I haven't got married because those issues stay strong underneath.
In other words, has it ever happened to you? Has it happened to you before? Have you been in a situation that, as I described it?
Well, of course, if any time that you've been intimate with someone, you...
But have you actually experienced abuse? I mean, knowingly that you're in an abusive situation.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in an abuse.
And so you, and therefore you gave yourself in, and you've actually experienced it yourself. So it's like a generational thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking out for you when I talk to you this way.
No,
I'm
And don't get me wrong, I actually have really put it into thought and process, and
yeah.
And I'm aware of it, and I'm saddened by my own reaction that again I did it after being so good for so long.
Yeah, well, still. Now, this seems to be a decent young man, and most young men fall into the same trap. You fall into the trap together. You both suffer. The suffering isn't just one-sided, you see. And so, but you can have a relationship with him, but if he will, it shouldn't be you. If he would just not press his advantage that he has this advantage, and yours is you can exploit his advantage to make it a bigger, to make it your advantage, which makes him less of a man and you more of a whore. Oh, pardon me, I said that. Don't go away. I'll have to talk to you more about this because of the way I said it. All right, we'll be right back. You know the difference between a whore and a wife? I bet you don't. I'm talking about to my audience, not to my caller, a decent lady that's, you know, got a problem and we're trying to resolve it so it doesn't happen that way. I want her to be respected. I want her to be loved in a proper way. And she's got a young man that is capable of it. But, you know, we, the human race, we're all born with impulses and wrong ideas about those impulses, and yet sense a little embarrassment over them and not quite understand what this embarrassment that follows us through all of our lives is. And then you suddenly get caught up in a maelstrom of man-woman relationship, and there's a broken home, and there's drunkenness, and there's suicide, and there's violence, and all kinds of things which you see happening every day. It's divorce, and then it goes on to the next generations. And don't you see, there's a fine line of differences, the way you eat, the way you drink, the way you think. And that needs to be modified by your consciousness. And then it doesn't become a conscience which drives you to distraction and to find escape in the pleasure of it. Even if the distraction is vomiting in your own beer, you'll drink the beer until you vomit in it, in a manner of speaking, and you'll enjoy the vomit. In a manner of speaking, you'll enjoy the problem of it, and then you recover and you get back to drinking again. It's like you eat and eat and eat, and then you burp, and you've got heartburn, and then you take an Elsa-Seltzer, and that feels good. So you have to feel bad, so now you take the Elsa-Seltzer, and you feel good again, and you start eating again. See, so it's a vicious cycle. You relieve the pain, but that gives you license to enjoy what gave it to you.
You can't have pleasure without pain, so you have to have the pain. Otherwise, where's the pleasure? And so the pain gets worse, and so does the pleasure from relieving it, but so does the indulgence, the depth of indulgence, hold a greater grip on you. So it's with the relationship with men and women, that's where it begins. The difference between a whore and a wife. Will you ask me about that? Or are you too afraid? Are you too guilty? Please, we need to talk about this so you can have a decent life. And especially men need to understand this. I don't care about the women so much, but because it's men that's responsible for the condition that the women are in. And women are too eagerly cooperative. 866 Radio Roy. Call my office Monday and get some tapes on this subject. And FHU.com, go to the website and browse the website for information.
You're listening to Advice Line with Roy Masters. You can reach Roy at 1-800-866-8883. That's 1-800-866-8883.
Close to the divine fire. The girl of your dreams serves a nightmare of schemes, and that's what it is. Do you want a wife that's good, or you want a wife that makes you feel good? They're not the same. All right, now, where were we, Patty? But you see, I don't want you to become the kind of woman I just mentioned. See, I want you to be... I know you come from a broken home and you've been drawn to give yourself to anyone who gives you a fair amount of attention, which is not healthy. And here you have a nice young man. And so your question is, since you've had your relationship and you made your mistake in knowing that you shouldn't, and he's realized that he's crossed the line... So that it will go on if you don't make a break and change his attitude, and you change yours, and you understand that he, because you're already starting to judge him already. Are you still there, Patty? I'm not sure if you're still there. Yeah, you're starting to judge him. See,
oh, because totally. I see.
You haven't told him that. You, I said, I know it, because you, in other words, here's Superman. Here's the man that's supposed to love you. The quality of a father in this man was not there. He didn't consider you, only considered his own self-pleasure. But he couldn't help it. He didn't know any more than you did when you gave yourself. So, but he, to him goes the greater burden of guilt. And not you, because it's the role of men to look out for their women, to love their women, to honor their innocence. See? And not just to jump into bed the first time you see each other, as if that was love. And then marry. As if that's the continuation of love. It's only the continuation of the same relationship. That's why I'm saying you can still enjoy. You see, he's a good man. There's no need to run. And he has children. So why not? Why can't you just find a way to... He can work and he can take care... You can come and take care of the children. You might want to live next door or something. Or maybe you could live in the same house with honor. And he will... He should... not press his sensual advantage, because you're in a weaker state, and he has the job, and you're a woman who needs love. And so therefore, you need him to love you and restrain himself, and he won't die from it. You need to have a non-sexual relationship for a while, so that the children can see that you are not being loved more than he is loving them. See? In other words... That sensual relationship, it stinks. And the children see the stink of it, and they see that there's something about you that's stealing the life, the attention, and the love from the father to you, and you're a stranger. And somehow, it doesn't seem fair, and they start to hate you. And you can be as nice as you want, but you're going to have troubles.
No, see? I already have a ton of troubles.
See that? But it's all par for the course, and everybody listening has the same problem. There's not anybody any different. So if you can find a way to be with him fairly often, not too much,
and in a way that you are a friend and a kindly friend to the children, and not after his, you know, obsessing on him and he obsessing on you, because in the back of his mind he's doing everything to get his fix. Can't help that, don't you see? And you are evolving a judgment on him that you cannot talk about. That will kill you.
Right.
You understand that, don't you?
No, I do.
Straighten this thing out in a noble way.
But
and I say
same,
that. Go
at the
ahead.
Same time, I have a question for you. I understand what you're saying about him and I's relationship, but then I have the relationship with the sons that. I guess I grew up extremely strict and responsible in some ways, obviously.
I know, but you can't use that strictness there. You don't have the authority. That's your problem. You
so
don't have the authority.
I did not expect anything from these little boys?
No. The thing is, you can't be the disciplinarian. You're a stranger. You own the father. They don't like that. They're not stupid, you know. They know you own him. They do. And they resent that. And they resent you for the intrusion. You cannot be their authority. Don't even try. Don't even try to be strict. You have no business disciplining them. The only way you can discipline them is if at one time, there is a time that could come where you love this man in a way for his goodness. In a roundabout way, his love, the love of his goodness, awakens the goodness in you. It doesn't awaken. See, The love of a man for a woman draws up the love of a woman for a man draws out his sensuality, but the true love of a man for a woman draws her away from the sensuality. In other words, it brings up a noble quality in her that she respects in him, and when she respects him that way, the children will love you too, and not a minute before. As long as you have this relationship, the kids will despise you. Okay?
Okay.
As nice as you want to be, it's only an act, and they know it. Ladies and gentlemen, am I right or wrong? Give me a call. Because I know that you all have some relationship like that. So why don't you call me about it and get it off your chest? And let's talk more deeply about it. 866 Radio Roy. Call my office on Monday. And get my books on sexuality, sensuality, and also the Be Still and Know meditation exercise on FHU.com, the website. We'll be right back. I'm Roy Masters, and David, we'll be back after a break.
Now available as a subscription, the Lecture of the Month offers the 2007 July 4th Freedom Seminar, perhaps one of the most important seminars ever given by Roy Masters. The subject was freedom. The discussions were very deep. The result was powerful. Dr. George Hader joined Roy Masters at this seminar, which added an entirely new dimension to many of the discussions. Subscribe now to the Lecture of the Month and you'll receive part one, the first installment of 5 life-saving days at Tall Timber Ranch. Choose to receive by mail a CD or tape every month for $200 a year. Or you can order the audio subscription on the website for just $80 a year. If you'd like to order part one only, call 1-800-877-3227 and ask for the January 2008 Lecture of the Month. For more information, visit FHU.com or call 1-800-877-3227 during regular business hours, Monday through Friday, West Coast time.
The program you are hearing has been made possible by listeners like you. For over 40 years now, Roy Masters has been searching the airwaves for those ready to enact a positive, lasting change in their lives. His no-nonsense, direct approach cuts straight to the heart of his listeners' problems and saves them years of therapy and medications. His prison ministry enables lost souls to regain control of their lives and become productive members of society. And don't forget the many children who have benefited from their parents' understanding of Roy Masters' teachings. If you have been helped by this program, please help us to help others by making a regular donation to the Foundation of Human Understanding. However small, every little bit helps. Just call our office between 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time and ask about our convenient auto debit program. The number is 800-877-3227. Without you, none of this could have been made possible. Thank you for your continued support.